Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
This is the Techno Gaze podcast. You can hear us live on Joy 94.9 Saturday afternoon from noon via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen-live. Or tune your wireless in Melbourne to 94.9 FM.
1, 2, 3, 4!
Use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, nail it, grade it, change it, point it to me, press it, snap it, work it, quick, erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quickly write it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip and zip it, lock it, fill it, call it, find it, view it, code it, jam and lock it, surf it, scroll it, pause it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch it, date it, name it, read it, tune it.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Techno Gaze, the show where we gaze into the world of consumer electronics, gadgets, and technology. My name is Mark, and with me in the studio, as always, as a little team that we are.
What are we? The threesome?
We should come up with a better name.
Let's brainstorm the group name later on, shall we?
And if anybody has got an idea for a group name, why don't you sort of let us know?
That's a good idea.
Send us an email on air@joy.org.au.
Yes.
Give us a call on 1300-JOY-949 and Mushin will take your message, or just SMS 0427-JOY-949. Or you can tweet us.
You can do all those things. Well, maybe not the tweets, but you can do all those things in the app, which is really cool, and listen to us at the same time. Mm-hmm. You're a bit of a multitasker.
Those two voices are Michael as well.
That's me.
And Raina as well.
Hello.
Welcome to Saturday. It's actually after a pretty dreary week in terms of weather. You know, we shouldn't always talk about the weather, but why not?
It's Melbourne. That's like the national pastime. That and footy.
And I saw the sun out earlier, but I'm now looking out the window and it's all looking a bit grey. So
good plan to stay indoors with your technical gadgets and
that's right.
Play with your iPhones and Samsungs and whatevers.
On today's show, now you might have heard about a thing called Heartbleed in the mainstream media.
And that's not my love life.
Well, it is mine. We'll kick off with what it is and how it affects you and some advice on what you need to do to avoid it, to try and resolve any issues that might have come from it.
It's pretty big. It's such a big deal.
It is. Now, a couple of Apple rumours have surfaced over the past couple of weeks, so we thought we'd spend a bit of time bringing you up to date on that. Mozilla has hit the headlines as well, with the recently promoted CEO having been outed as a Prop 8 supporter. He has since resigned, so we thought we'd have a go at the issues surrounding the guy and what this might mean from a company who defines itself as being open. Now, later in the show, of course, we've got some Microsoft stuff as well. So they've updated Windows 8 and some...
Hopefully a few other people have.
Yeah.
Or at least a 7.
Oh, yes.
Away from XP. Yes.
We talked about this last week, didn't we? XP is end of life, and so the support for that and bug fixes and security fixes are a thing there. But
yeah.
So later on in the show, we are going to specifically talk about Windows 8 and some of the features, including bringing it back into the desktop world again. So they're trying to fix the problems of using it on the desktop, because a lot of people are complaining about that. But there's also some new features, right? So there's
loads of stuff to talk about, especially in this update. So, yeah.
But yeah, on the topic of Windows XP, we're going to bring this home a little bit. Now, you might have heard, if you've been listening to to Joy this morning, we've kicked off a tech drive. For 2014. Now, the tech drive is in order for us to obtain. We need funds. Basically, we need money to keep us going from a technical point of view.
That's right.
You look around the station here, and a lot of our machines have been upgraded to Windows 7.
That's right.
We just happen to use that particular operating system here. But there are still some machines that are on Windows XP, and the reason for that is they literally don't have the capacity to be updated.
And let's be real, without funds, we can't afford to replace those computers.
That's right. So we're asking you to donate, to give us money to upgrade machines, but to also do other things around technology as well here. So there's
Did this a couple of years ago, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
I think that the outcome of that was we got an excellent new production studio.
We sure did.
Which creates great audio here at Joy. It's one of the smallest studios here, but it's perfect for producing all the little sponsorship announcements and community service announcements. So that's a tangible thing that we've achieved because of the funding that we get from you. So if you would like to give us some money, you can do so by jumping online, I believe. There's a Tech Drive banner up on the website, joy.org.au. You can also call 1300-JOY-949.
And the good thing is that every donation above $2 is tax deductible.
Yes.
Hooray!
Perfect time of year if you're looking to reduce your taxable income. I often find that donating at this time of year makes my accountant happy.
That's because he's got some good news for you for a change.
That's right. But, so do consider opening up your wallets and giving us some money because we need...
Let's not varnish it. Please just...
Look, yep. I'm not about...
No, that's right.
...sugarcoating anything. We're a community organisation. We run on the smell of... An oily rag, I think, is the term.
And we don't run on air, as the saying goes around here.
That's the one I was trying to look for. Thank you very much. Don't run on air.
We don't run on air that smells like oil or something. I don't know. We don't. We've had a couple of... we've had a suggestion for... we've had a rude suggestion.
We won't read out the first one, but I do like Pete's from Flemington's suggestion.
Yes. Hello, Pete. Thank you for your suggestion. I don't...
He's put in two suggestions. He said, hello, techno-gazers.
Well, that's a good
which
start.
Is a good name itself. Mm. You could call yourselves the Tribites, maybe.
The Tribites?
Mm.
The Tribites.
Well, that's two good suggestions right there. Technogazes is the obvious one, but it's pretty good.
So often the word bite is used in a way to describe a technology thing. So why not be called the Tribites? It's a great connection.
Or the three bits. Actually, we could if there were seven of us, we could be a bit short of a bite.
Not us, not at all on a Saturday morning. That's
as we stand, we're 5 bits short of a bite.
Now, shall we get on with the news of the day? Now, Heartbleed is pretty damn massive. Excuse the French, but...
So what is Heartbleed exactly for those people that don't know?
Well, so SSL, let me try and explain this without umming and ahhing like I did the other day when we talked about this. okay, so in SSL, when you connect to to go back even further, you know when you go to your internet banking or whatever and you've got your nice little gold padlock and it says HTTPS at the start of the URL and all the rest of it. And there's a lot of stuff that goes on there to make sure that your connection with that server is kept secure. Yep. There's a lot of encryption going on, a few other bits and pieces like that. Now, part of that protocol... as it's implemented for a lot of those servers, says it has a little thing built into it called a heartbeat. So when you're connected to a server to do a thing like that, your computer will be saying, hey, you're still there. And the server will be like, yeah, I'm still here. Hey, you're still there. Yeah, I'm still here. But the bug that's in Heartbleed says, hey, are you still here? And can you also tell me 64 kilobytes worth of data from your memory?
Oh.
Wow. And there's no evidence that it happens by default, because nothing gets logged.
Yep.
So you can say, hey, you're still there, and can I have a bunch of stuff out of where you keep your passwords, please, or whatever. So anything that's in memory...
No record of it, of any...
There's no record that if somebody has exploited it, of it having happened, so until you find somebody parading your password around on social media or whatever it is that they're going to do with it.
This little heartbeat actually occurs between you and the server. Is it your own computer that's at risk here, or is it the server?
It's the information that's on the server.
Right.
Right. So that could be...
If a hacker knows where to look in the memory of the server, they could potentially find out stuff.
That's the deal.
Mm.
So there's actually... Now, we're all fans of XKCD here, I think, at TechnoGaze, which is a great little nerdy comic. And it actually explains it. It says... you know, it's got like a little dialogue between a user and a server, and it says, "Are you still there? If so, reply potato," which is six letters long, and the server says potato. She asks it something else and says, "Are you still there? If so, reply the word hat and add 500 letters to that," and out comes a whole bunch of people's passwords and things that people want to know and all this other stuff. So if you go to xkcd.com, it actually sort of explains what's going on.
Yep.
So
in a humorous way.
Basically,
we all love XKCD, don't we?
We do, but this isn't funny because the reason, I mean, yeah, the comic's funny. The reason why this isn't funny is because pretty much anything that is interesting about what you're communicating with that server or what is stored on that server, what the server's doing at the moment, could be easily exploited. And that's, it's struck a number of different things. I checked a bank that I use and apparently that was susceptible, so I haven't been logging into my internet banking all week. Yahoo Mail, which a lot of people use, that was susceptible for a while. So, you know, attackers, once they knew about it, could just sort of randomly grab up people's email addresses, people's actual emails. I think the other thing, so XKCD has covered this twice, but the other thing that the characters from that comic said, it could be anything. It could be traffic data, emails, passwords, or erotic fan fiction. How... awful.
Some of us are into that sort of thing.
Do you want everybody knowing it? Do you want everybody seeing your carefully crafted Xena fan fiction? Well, maybe you do. But there it is. So anything that's stored in computer memory is up for grabs.
Yeah. Now, we do have a bit more to say on Heartbleed as well, including some of the coverage of the guy who actually introduced this particular bug. He's been found.
What?
So,
because it's open source, right? So it's pretty easy to just say, "Well, who committed these changes?"
Yes. So we'll be back in a few moments. But you're listening to TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9.
Joy.
That's right. This is Joy 94.9. This is TechnoGaze. We talk about tech. We talk about bugs in SSL. Yes, so if you've been listening, you would. We've had a quick rundown of what it is, what Heartbleed is. You've probably seen it in the mainstream media in the last couple of days because it is pretty massive. Like it's in open SSL, which is a module of software that is practically in every open source. Thing that does SSL. Connections, so it's
kind of a big deal. So what should we do?
Well, that was going to be my question because we know that the big players like Google have obviously gone in and patched their servers, but how do people know whether the site they want to access has been patched or not, or whether it's been affected?
Sure. So I mean, there's a couple of things at play there. So yeah, you should check if your favorite websites have been compromised, and in fact, if they have been compromised, then it's a really great idea to change your password, even if you're not sure that anything actually happened. Because the thing is, this bug apparently was. Possibly not well known by a lot of people, although it may well have been, who knows, you just can't be sure. So if your site, if your favourite sites like your banking or whatever like that was compromised, then you should change it. But you should not change it until after you know that they fixed the bug, because what's the point of changing your password if the bug's still exploitable, right?
So the issue is that while it was vulnerable, while the site was vulnerable, which is potentially for the last 2 years, in fact, during that time, any time that you've connected to that site, if a hacker was looking at the server at the same time, is potentially able to find out the password that you used at that point in time. So,
And now that everybody knows, well, all the bad guys know that this bug is out there, as well as all the good guys, then now is probably not the time to be doing it until you're very, very sure that it's been fixed up.
It's really important that they fix their servers. And that's why this is such big news, right? So it's actually... Like, so many sites out there are affected by it. And you've got a lot of the big sites, you know, coming out and saying, yes, we were affected by it, but yes, we've resolved it. There's also the ability to check online. You can just go to a website, which is... Should I change my password.com/heartbleed?
Yeah, now that's got a huge article about what it all means, so you can do a bit more reading. It's got a link to a tool that you can use to check and see if your favourite websites or not have been affected. And on that Monday that it was released, or the bug, sorry, was revealed, there was an estimation that 17% of the SSL websites in the world had been affected. So that's a lot of websites to check out. The other thing that's worthwhile, if you use LastPass, I personally don't, but I think you guys do, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Yep. So there's actually, if you do use LastPass, which is kind of like a password manager tool, what it'll do is it'll tell you whether any of your stored passwords that you keep in LastPass are associated with sites that are possibly shonky, and it also tells you if it's time to change it.
Yep. So I ran that. There's a security check function under LastPass, and I ran that this morning, and it went through all of my stored websites, and it came back and said, yes, which ones are affected by Heartbleed, which ones aren't, which is good. And the other good thing that it did do is it said, do you want to go and check for whether your email address has been exposed as part of some of the vulnerabilities?
Okay.
And this is the first time I did this, and I said yes, and it came back and said that I was affected by one of the Adobe releases.
So this is October. This is not related necessarily to Heartbleed, but it's actually a way to check whether you've been compromised in other ways or potentially your information has been released.
So what this tells me is that I should go and change my Adobe password, which I will do. And luckily, because I'm using LastPass, it is a unique password that's only used for that site. So even if that is compromised, then I'll be safe elsewhere.
We should... LastPass, we've talked about it before. It's actually a password management tool, so it's a way to store your passwords in a secure manner. So if you want to go down that path, it's a way it's a tool that you can use, which has some extra features like looking for vulnerabilities as well.
That's right.
It's pretty nifty.
And I think we should say we will put up on the Facebook page the link to that should I change my password URL so that people can use that to check to see whether their favourite site has been affected by Heartbleed or not and what the current status is.
Now, I'm just going to cover off because it's some interesting news came out this morning. Ben Grubb, who's one of my favourite writers at Fairfax, he's done a good write-up of the whole issue and what it's all about. Part of that was actually the discovery of the person who introduced this bug in the first place. Now, it's open source software that we're talking about here, so it's actually stuff that's been committed under a person's name, and it was just literally like a couple lines of code that caused this bug, right? So it's nothing major. From a software developer's point of view, it's quite an easy thing to do. You just forget to do that little check or whatever, or you perhaps were in a rush when you did that part of the software. They're supposed to have a review process around this, but that review process occurred and it
wasn't picked up.
It wasn't picked up. The vulnerability wasn't picked up. So a guy it originated from a guy called, he's actually a doctor, Dr. Robin Siegelman of Münster in Germany. Said that the bug, he actually was the one who introduced the bug, and it was unfortunately missed, I'm using my air quotes there, as he was writing the code, and a reviewer missed it when it was introduced into the open source software. So the reviewer, Dr. Stephen Henson, apparently all the software developers there are doctors.
I won't make any comment.
It's interesting to know that because it is open source software, we're actually able to delve into who committed the bug in the first place. A lot of questions coming about now, you know, was it on purpose, was it not, all that sort of thing. I suspect it wasn't. It's the kind of thing that software developers can easily forget to do.
There's a flip side to open source. You know, on the good side is that you can get peer review and you can get people looking through the code and actually finding bugs like this long after they've been there, which you wouldn't have if it was closed source. But, of course, the flip side of it is that it means anybody can read it, and if somebody reads it and wants to do something bad, they can take advantage of it without telling anybody.
Well, there's that whole aphorism of, you know, with many eyes, all bugs are shallow, which is kind of a thing. I think it's sometimes it sort of ignores the fact that a lot of projects don't always have a great number of people looking at things. Now, you'd think that OpenSSL would be really exciting stuff to work on if you're a bit of a nerd, but in actuality, security is a very sort of esoteric sort of thing to think about, and maybe there weren't that many people looking at it after all.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of that reliance on the idea that there'll be, you know, bazillions of developers everywhere, but if it's really obscure, are they really?
Yeah, and it's the kind of thing that if one developer is looking at it, another developer actually wrote it. You know, it's typically the same kind of mindset those two people that are in, and therefore you might not actually pick up those kinds of things anyway. It's like it's not until it is rigorously tested by security experts that you can actually figure. And you'd hope that the people that are working on open SSL are security experts, but...
Oh, I'm sure that they are. We all make mistakes because we're human beings.
Yeah, right? On a line-by-line basis in code, that's very hard to be an expert at that level.
It would be interesting to see if there's any metric about the number of bugs found in open source code versus the number of bugs found in closed source code. Because, you know, recently Apple had this issue with SSL on their browser,
mm-hmm.
which had been around for, you know, I don't know how long.
Yes.
And I know that other browsers have had that problem. So, yeah, it would be interesting to see what the comparison is like and whether there is any better quality with open source software, or whether it's just as good or just as bad as any other piece of software.
See, that's the thing. Like, open source software doesn't just mean do people look at it, right? It only means about the license, right? It doesn't matter if you have an open source product that open source project that has only, you know, two or three people working on it. It's not inherently better than a commercial product that has 100,000. You know, bug reports about it and stuff and years and years of experience. Of course it's not. So it's kind of a false metric.
But theoretically, you have the potential for people to crawl through the code and have a look at it and examine it and try to find issues with it.
Mm.
There's always a fallback, if it's open source. I personally can go in, if I really care about the software that much, I can go through each line of code and become an expert at SSL and figure out if anything in there is actually going to be exploitable. It's a very hard thing to do.
Mm.
But at least the source code is open and they're able to pinpoint where the problem occurred.
Yep. And, of course, if you have been using the site that's affected, you should change your password once they fix it.
That's exactly right. Just a reminder. we've had a couple more suggestions from listener Texas. Team Nerd Power, the Geeky 3.
Mm.
Or
the third one there, we can't...
Is team brand name of a popular computer that a lot of us like to use.
Of a fruit, yeah, we do all have one with
nature.
Us.
Excuse me.
What?
Oh, actually, I do.
Yes. So thank you for your suggestions. We're asking for suggestions on what we should call ourselves. We have a cute little avatar up on our iTunes feed, which depicts us three in a cutesy kind of way. Maybe you could use
that. Nice plug for our iTunes feed there.
That's right.
You can listen to us on a podcast anytime you want.
joy.org.au/technogaze. Of course, if you are listening to us on the podcast right now, then thank you.
Thank you indeed.
Technogaze.
This is Technogaze here on Joy 94.9, where we cover technology, gadgets, consumer electronics, and the odd bit of labor law as well.
A bit. Oh, my goodness.
Now, Mozilla.
Yes.
It's also been in the news this past few weeks as well. There's the CEO that was recently promoted for Mozilla. Now, Mozilla, of course, is a company that creates the very, very famous Firefox.
Yes, and behind them is a non-profit foundation as well. So, and they've been going for ages and ages and ages.
Yep. Yeah. They make money through advertisements. Mainly Google revenue, I believe. Every time you type in a search into your Firefox browser and get sent to a Google search results page, Google give Mozilla money.
Hmm.
And that funds all the work that they do to create the software. And you pointed out, Rainer, it is a non-profit foundation. But it is a foundation nonetheless, and they have a CEO. And the CEO was recently outed, I guess you could say, for...
Ousted, I think, ousted. Might be the better word in this particular story.
I wouldn't want to play on the word too much, but he was a Prop 8 supporter.
That's right. So Brendan
Ike, I think Ike
is his name.
Mm.
Ike. There you go. So he's kind of a big deal. He's the inventor of JavaScript.
Oh, really?
A very big deal. And he was the CTO of Mozilla for a good long while.
Mm-hmm.
And he was recently elevated to the position of CEO.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not just recently, and it happened a little while ago that it did appear that because in California, if you donate over a certain amount of money to a campaign, you have to be put on a public register, and that's there for good reason, so that you know you can see
where the money's
follow the money,
from.
Right? Yep. Yeah, exactly. And somebody checked that out and they said, wow, here's a guy that donated to Proposition 8. And actually, Michael, you were in our production of 8 the Play, weren't you?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so which we had just recently. And if you were listening to that or if you've been following the news about Proposition 8, as I'm sure many of us were, you'd know that there was quite a lot of, you know, awful advertising going on around it, trying to convince ordinary Californians that they shouldn't, that they should vote actually to take away.
And that was the amazing thing out of the play, was that when the Prop 8 supporters were trying to bring witnesses there, they had a very difficult time bringing somebody to the court who could actually testify about certain things, because there was a whole lot of malicious gossip and rumour that they were pushing out in the media,
that's right,
which didn't need any sort of verification. But to get somebody of competence to the jury, they weren't able to do that.
That's right, because the blanket sort of, you know, okay, it was pretty horrible, basically. And I mean, a lot of people who lived there, you know, at the time, have said how awful it was to hear on the TV and radio and stuff every day that you are a less worthy human being, and which is basically, you know, I guess what a lot of people are upset about. Anyway, so here's this fellow, Brendan Ike. I'm so sorry.
He was the chief technology officer of Mozilla before he got promoted as CEO.
Yep, so he'd been in that role for a while.
You know, defining certain, you know, the technology strategy of Mozilla and how they...
And apparently doing so very well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the fact of his donation to Prop 8 was made, was discovered around about 2012. And
yes,
there's a little bit of noise about it at the time.
There was. But when he was elevated to this role of CEO, there was quite a lot more noise.
Interesting, isn't it? That
a lot of noise.
CEO actually means so much more to to create this hoo-ha.
Well, that's the thing. Like, the if you're the CTO, right, your technology decisions, the buck stops with the CTO, right? Or it should.
CEO, on the other hand,
has a lot more responsibility. So I think what a lot of people were getting angry about, and a lot of the noise, and there was a lot of noise. So on social media, there were people baying for blood almost, you know, because you know how social media can get. There's a lot of people that get very angry. You've only got 140 characters on, say, Twitter, for example, to say something. So maybe your words are not always as considered as they could be. and there was quite a lot of kerfuffle anyway. After a lot of thunderclouds around that, he did end up stepping down.
Yes, now he stepped down.
Not only did he step down, but he left the foundation that he helped found.
Okay.
For good. So, well, maybe he'll come back, but at the moment he's just like, nah, I'm gone.
So the question comes to mind, and I don't want to be considered a supporter of Prop 8 by saying this, but I just do want to sort of raise the other side, the flip side of this coin, is that, you know, is it right? And I personally think, from a moral point of view, a company that considers itself open and considers itself part, you know, it's defined by openness, right?
Yep.
And that should not just apply. I mean, it's not
just even openness, but freedom.
Yes,
that is the big F word in the Mozilla Foundation's mission, and everything else that it works for is freedom.
Yep. So someone who is in such a high position, in fact, runs a company essentially that is about freedom. Is it right for his own personal money donations to be made public in this way and to be sort of, you know, used against him, I guess?
Well, look, in terms of his donations being made public, he's like any other citizen of California in that regard.
Yep.
So whether it's right or not, it's not like he's being singled out.
No.
But his position as CEO obviously makes him a little bit more...
I guess it's an interesting thing. It's like a perception thing as well, isn't it?
There
so,
is.
You know, what do I think of Mozilla? How do I use, you know, will I use Firefox if I know about this?
I've been in two minds about this as well, because part of me says that, you know, how does that affect his ability to lead the organization from producing what it's meant to be producing, which is open source software and providing something of value to the tech community?
Yes.
But the other part of me says, well, I don't agree with his views, and I don't think, you know, and that would impact me in terms of how I move forward, perhaps with choosing Mozilla products over other products.
Sure.
And the way they've resolved it is that if the CEO of a large organisation, let's say Telstra, has a certain view that I really object to, then you know what? I'm going to be influenced not to use their products. And it's just the same as this. And if you've got enough people out there bleating about it, then the board is going to do something, or the individual will turn around, like in this case, and said, look, I can't effectively lead the company. I'm going to leave.
Mm. Sure. I get what you're saying, certainly about views and stuff as well. It's hard to... And I mean, I'm a... in my non-radio life, also a bit of a labour activist, so I'm involved in trade unions and stuff. And, I mean, we get quite angry when we hear that people who's, you know, people are being excluded from things at work or excluded from opportunities because of views or whatever. I personally think that for Brendan Eich to have that view, if he keeps it to, you know, keeps it compartmentalised like that, that's fine. But somebody who donates money, and a significant amount of money, like $1,000 is not $2 in the rattle tin at you know, the corner. Someone who actually does that with the full knowledge that it would be used for a campaign to, he may not have known how awful those things were going to be, but that's what happened. To donate money to something that says, I think that certain people should have less civil rights. What does that say about his attitude towards his employees to whom he is responsible? Because that's the thing. It's not just about...
I think that, and that's the connection that needs to be made. It's is it going to affect my use of the products? Is he going to make decisions that are perhaps influenced by his own personal views or that sort of thing? And it's a grey area because you don't really know what goes on in the, you know, in organisation.
You don't know. But the thing is, when he was asked, he said, oh, yeah, I'm committed to this and I'm committed to that. But at not one time did he suggest that he was sorry. And you know what? If he firmly believes and he sticks to his guns and he wants to be honest, that's fine. He doesn't have to say that he's sorry. But there was nothing in his behaviour that indicated
that
he would be a fair person.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of people were saying. Anyway. And again, I don't work there and what I know, but wow. You know, it's, you can see why a lot of people would be concerned about that.
Now, I'm going to try and make the link here very quickly to Australia's government. There's been some talk about a certain Facebook and Twitter user having been pulled up over Twitter, mind you, by an Australian government department, I think the Department of Immigration.
She's one of our sisters in community radio, that person.
Yes.
Does some stuff on 2ACR, I think.
Yes. And so what actually happened, she apparently posted something on her Facebook profile, on her Facebook feed, on the wall.
It was uncomplimentary to the government?
Yes.
Gasp.
I think it was a picture, in fact. And as a result, the apparently it was also public. So it wasn't just a private post within her friends. It was actually something that could be seen publicly. But the Australian government, the immigration department, tweeted her and said, we have it's come to our attention that something of a bad nature is up on your Facebook feed. Please remove it or we will consider our options.
Yeah.
So Big Brother.
This is the other side of it, right?
It was border protection, by the way. It's not like, you know, the Department of Fluffy Bunnies. Can we have a Department of Fluffy Bunnies? So he said that to her. The other thing that also came out around that sort of thing is that there is a policy in government departments, and this is actually, it isn't new, but it's the rhetoric around it certainly is, that you should not say things as a member of the public service that could affect the perception of your impartiality as a government employee. Because, I mean, if you're the Prime Minister of Australia, you want to know that the people who advise you are fair and unbalanced. And if they're on Facebook every day posting what a big duty head you are, then, you know, that's not going to be good.
So that effectively says that nobody in the public service can make any comment, either positive or negative.
Publicly. Or that. It's, I mean...
So are you basically saying to public servants, you're not allowed to have a Twitter feed?
You're not a functioning citizen of democracy.
Well, I don't know. I think that's not really what they're saying. But yeah, you just have to watch what you say. And the thing that I think got really grubby around it this week is, you know, oh, if you happen to know that one of your mates is on Facebook posting uncomplimentary things about the Prime Minister.
Dobbing a mate.
Wow. I don't like the word un-Australian, but dobbing is a bit un-Australian. I don't know.
That's true, isn't it?
It's something
our,
that is...
Our convict past, perhaps.
Maybe not snitching on our fellow.
Well, I think the word dobbing itself is an Australianism, isn't it?
It is.
Yes. So, therefore, it would be an un-Australian act by default.
As I learned in prep, dobbers wear nappies, as the saying goes. No, but it's... I mean, if you're not... Especially if you're under an assumed name, right? And I'll cop to this as well. Some years ago when I was a public servant of the state of Tasmania, I had a blog and it had... I never posted anything about the Tasmanian government, or if I did, it was very sort of light on, but wow.
Having also had an experience in government, you do want to be careful about it. It's almost like there's a professional line to draw. If it's something about your immediate work, as in something that could be related to very quickly to what you do on a day-to-day basis,
yep.
that's when your opinion perhaps is more a professional opinion than, yep. Than an actual, civil rights opinion
and
or whatever.
Yeah, and there's risks around that that aren't just about, you know, oh, did you say something mean about Tony or whatever like that? There's also, you know, if you are an employee of, say, Centrelink and you make a opinion about a particular policy or whatever that Centrelink does because that's what you do at work or something like that, yep. what if people are construing that as official advice from, you know, your position and stuff like that? So that's why this policy is in there. Mm. But yeah, it is. I mean, we actually just got a text that from somebody who didn't give their name. That's really creepy. Thought police isn't freedom.
True.
It is. That's right.
It starts to make you think, are we, you know, heading to a thought police state? Mm. Maybe. Hopefully not. Hopefully we are maintained our rights to freedom of expression in all ways, and hopefully Joy can provide that to you as we continue doing so every single day. This is TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9.
TechnoGaze. All day, every day. Joy 94.9. On air and online at joy.org.au.
TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9. We are on air and online all the time. You can check out our feed on joy.org.au/listen live. If you're not near a radio, then you can check
you can
out.
Always be with us.
Yes. Now
let's lighten the mood a bit.
I think it's it'd be nice to move away from all the politics for just a little bit.
Let's talk about something rad.
Yes. Now, Microsoft have made some news. Finally, they've released the new update for Windows 8.
Yes. I installed it this week.
Did you?
I did. And in fact, if you are running Windows 8.1, you should install that update as well, because if you don't do so within a month, you will stop getting patches.
Right.
Wow. They're not stuffing around this time.
They're really cutting the, you know, they're putting the foot down, aren't they, with
really
the updates.
Are they going to then shut down the old version? You know, if you don't upgrade, it will just shut itself down.
I think that would be horrible if they did.
Perhaps display a handy little message saying, hey, this is no longer going to get support. Like
we did all over our clocks. In the studio. I don't know if it'll show a message. I'm sure that it will, but that's the idea. So if you don't apply this update, which has quite a lot of interesting things in it, then you won't get patches anymore if you're running Windows 8. If you're running Windows 7, don't worry. There's different patches for you. Mm. The update, though, is pretty cool in that a lot of the things that people don't like about Windows 8 or haven't liked about Windows 8, they've been sort of incrementally improving. So the original Windows 8, for example, was all very touchscreeny and stuff like that, which is not much fun for me on my big gaming PC where I don't have a touchscreen, but I do have a lovely keyboard and mouse.
Yeah, mice using a touch screen sort of oriented thing is just really hard.
It's a bit tone deaf, I think. So it got a little bit better in terms of how that was being used. And with the update, it got even better still. So, for example, there's the Metro interface, which I think is called the Modern interface, really, but everyone's been calling it Metro because they like their code names. And it looks kind of like what you get on the Xbox 360 and stuff and the Xbox One, and it looks really funky. And now that just gets out of your way, and it's more like a clever start menu, a big clever start menu, but it's right there. So it's a mega start menu.
It's like Windows 7, is it?
Well, it goes straight to the desktop, just like regular old Windows. Oh, my goodness. Remember that. So that's pretty cool. There's a few other improvements around performance and stuff as well. So it's definitely worthwhile updating, but not least because of that patch thing.
And one feature that's rated mention is something that emulates Google Now and Apple's Siri. They're launching Cortana.
Now, if you are a gaming fan, then you'll recognise the name Cortana as the name of the AI that helps you out in Halo.
Oh, right.
She's a very major character, and now she's back in your phone.
She's right there in your phone.
And she's apparently amazing.
Have you tried it? I would like to find out if anyone has managed to get the latest update for the Windows Phone software. And you have got the ability to use Cortana.
Mm.
What's it like? Does it do the job? Does it respond to you? Does it take your text message well, or is it all garbled? But yeah, I think that's interesting. They've brought their phone software up to some of the key features of the other phone operating systems.
They've given it a red hot go, which is interesting because their market share is not great.
I think they've taken it a step further than what Apple and Google have done, because they've also got integration to third-party apps.
yep.
with this.
Yep.
So they
yep.
can integrate with Facebook, for instance.
Yes. And, yeah, yes. It's so Siri, for example, you can any text box, you can actually use Siri to read into, but you have to be interactive with it. You have to
also be connected to the internet.
Yeah.
Now, Cortana, I don't think is available for regular schmoes like you and me who might be using Windows Phone yet, but it was announced at their Build Developer Conference.
Ah, right.
So it's probably not very far away, but if you're a developer, you may well be able to do that. So the Windows Phone 8.1 as opposed to Windows Desktop 8.1,
yep.
which is not confusing at all. That update will be happening in the next couple of months, so you can all test it out. But if you're a developer, I mean, we'd love to hear from you anyway. We love talking to developers. So.
We do.
But especially if you know something about Windows Phone.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
Now, Apple.
Rumours are plenty.
Rumours, well, not just rumours. There's also some pricing issues, of course, that have come up recently as well. But shall we start off with rumours first?
Yes. iPhones come out every year.
Yes.
Without fail at the moment. And the next one, because we've got the iPhone 5S at the moment,
mm-hmm.
the next one, everyone's pretty sure it's going to be the iPhone 6 if it follows the same sort of pattern.
What, of incrementing a number?
That's right. Well, 5, 5S, et cetera.
Yep.
Wow, we got a text message just now. Sorry to interrupt the Apple love, but we've got some Apple love here. A text from somebody pretending to be Siri, or perhaps it really
is.
Who
knows?
Maybe
it was actually taken, like this was dictated into the phone.
Cortana is my lesbian lover. I love Siri.
Well, actually, I suspect it is dictated into, because it actually says Cortona. Not Cortana.
It could be.
So, thank you for that one, anonymous messenger. Oh, and before we're talking about
government and social media,
and Dave has messaged in saying he's a contractor and he's always really careful what he writes on Twitter
about
government policy. It could easily impact the type of work I get.
Yeah, which is a good thing for covering your own butt, I reckon.
Mm.
We
got another cryptic message. I want a GLaDOS
Siri.
I don't know that reference.
Ah, so if you have ever played Portal, then the antagonist is a terrifying AI named GLaDOS who would really like you to do some fun science experiments. She also promises cake.
Oh, I like cake.
But the cake
mm-hmm.
is a lie.
Oh, no.
Apparently.
Oh.
So
there's no cake?
Spoiler alert, there could be.
Should we get back to iPhone, though?
So rumours 6. About the iPhone 6. Rumours, of course, that it will be called the iPhone 6 as distinct from, say, the S or the C or whatever it is that we've got. Also, rumours that there will be two new screen sizes available, 4.7 inches and 5.5 inches.
That's massive.
It is massive, and about the same size as screens were when people from Apple were kind of mocking Samsung and other things, going, but that's too big to use as a phone. How's your phablet, guys? Like... That's actually approaching phablet size, I reckon.
The current size of an iPhone 5 display is around 4 inches, so
that's
an extra 0.7 of an inch at least, if not more.
Not that we're counting.
No, no.
Although 5.5 is an impressive change.
Yes. I think that's pretty much it from the rumours front, isn't it?
There's one more report going on that Apple has started to think about buying a Japanese manufacturer of... Some microchips that it uses in its screens.
Right.
So that will kind of, you know, lock down that supply chain and give them a bit more control over it as well. Because we know that, you know, I mean, everyone has this.
Mm.
You know, oh, let's release a new phone. Oh, we've got a bajillion new phones and 2 bajillion people want them. So some of you are just going to have to wait. And that's always a bit disappointing. So I guess this will really help.
Now, also on Apple, the exchange rate here in Australia has been sort of on a bit of a roller coaster lately.
Yes.
And mostly on the down, although just this week it's been a bit more up. But having said that, it's been going down below the US dollar parity.
Quite a lot.
And Apple have responded. They some years back put their prices down here in Australia.
Yeah, mostly to match parity, because it is completely unfair, I think, to overcharge us just because the exchange rate might or might not be a little bit closer than that.
So when the dollar was at parity, were prices of music in Australia the same as in the US?
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty close. And now that the dollar has ducked a little bit, although it, like Mark said, it's kind of bouncing back, but they've put the pricing back to... back to some
back
slightly
to the
more
exorbitant Australia premium rates that seem to be in effect.
Yeah, and depending on how much you're spending, and it's not just music but also apps and things like that, depending on how much you're spending, you may be in for a bit of a shock. So, for example, the cost of an application that I bought recently, which was $99, has just gone up to $130.
Wow, that's quite big.
Yeah. That's a
large
jump.
More than the exchange rate.
That's a little bit cheeky. I guess the cost of shipping bits to Australia has gone up as well.
Yeah,
you know
well,
how it is.
Well, soft, for, so,
all those
bits across the internet. Yeah,
all those pigeons with those, all those little drones.
If they offered the Apple Store in Bitcoin, you wouldn't have any of this rubbish.
No, because the
rates.
Price of Bitcoin never fluctuates.
No, but at least you're paying in you've got standard Bitcoins. You take on the risk that way.
All I'm
Mark's
hearing,
rolling his eyes.
All I'm hearing is a reel of fishing line just going out to get certain people's backup about Bitcoin. Yes. Anyway, shall we? We are getting close to the end of the show. Unfortunately, we are running out of time, but we will have a little bit more to talk about. What's the last one that we're going to mention? Oh, some drones that dropped on people.
Drones from heaven.
You're listening to TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9. TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9, and we're running out of time, but we do have a nice, well,
a spot of drone news for you drone fans.
We do like drones here on TechnoGaze. I've got one myself and have had a little bit of a play with it. I get a bit worried about it when it goes a bit further than maybe 10 metres away from me, but that's the way it goes.
News about, and not the crash that you're thinking of maybe, but a little certain air crash investigation going on in Western Australia of a different kind, Ben, with a drone.
Just a drone, not a massive 777. Now, the CASA have put their investigation hat on again to look into a drone that was filming a triathlon in Geraldton in Western Australia. The drone was flying above athletes participating in the event around 9 a.m. last Sunday, where it reportedly dropped 10 metres and hit an athlete.
Oops.
Yeah, now Raja Ogden, I think is the name of the athlete, she ran towards, as she was running towards the finishing line, had this thing just drop on her head. Now, the owner of the drone was found, and after looking at the footage, has said that the video clearly shows that the drone dropped behind the runner. And added that this would be consistent with the injuries sustained by the runner. So
that doesn't seem like safe use of a drone to me, does it?
So did it hit her then?
Yeah, it struck her.
It did
struck
her, yeah. From behind, okay.
Now, CASA actually say that there are clear rules around the operation of unmanned aircraft, including the requirement to operate the drones no less than 30 metres from people at all times. I guess it's a good indication as to why that rule exists.
And what could have caused it?
So the owner reckons that the drop occurred because someone nearby channel hopped onto the frequency being used for control of the aircraft. And of course, that's sort of the idea of someone overriding your own signal with their signal.
Right.
On the
so like a mobile phone or something maybe.
Yeah, that's what they reckon. But I guess it could be whatever's in use. So some work with Wi-Fi. Connectivity. So if you somehow intercepted the Wi-Fi signal, might work.
Right.
So does that mean the operator's at fault?
Well, it might not be. I mean,
I suspect CASA's point about having to operate the drones 30 metres or more away from people at all times.
So in case there's a dropout, then there's not going to be a chance of hitting someone.
Good reason.
According to the report for the ABC, the fellow that owns the drone reckons that it may have been. Could have been, but he also points out, a spokesman from CASA points out rather that a lot of the sort of drones that you just go and buy from an electronics shop are a lot more basic. They don't have a lot more protection over that, and maybe a commercial drone wouldn't have that problem.
Right.
It's a bit worrying.
That's all we have time for today. If you missed any part of the show, or perhaps you're looking to peruse previous episodes, you can do so by browsing to joy.org.au/technogaze. Coming up next is a Joy News Bulletin with Shannon Gillies. And following that is Cravings with the Nudie Foodie, Pete Dillon. That's pretty much the end of the show. Thank you for joining me today, Raina.
No, thank you. It's been a pleasure as always.
And thank you, Michael, as well. Thank you very much for joining us today and pressing buttons.
Thank you.
We'll have a good weekend and we'll catch you next week. We'll be right back.
Techno Gaze on Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.